We get all right. We get
hey.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Josh Briscoe and Beards. We had up until 2 o'clock. Mick Schaefer will join us at 1 o'clock, halfway to our destination of getting you to Todd Lebo and Curtis Siebold. That's our whole plan. Our whole plan is to get you from 10 to 2 a little bit quicker than maybe it would have otherwise been. We heard from the Chiefs. We heard from Jeff Montgomery in the 10 o'clock hour. We talked some trade deadline stuff as well. And we also have tickets to give away to a movie premiere to B&B coming up tomorrow night, a little movie called Bullet Train with one Brad Pitt. That's an M-I-Z-Z-O-U for you right there.
I don't know if he's going to be at our screening or not, but I will be.
You're going to be there? Pretty much
this is good. Oh, yeah. We're going to do a little trivia beforehand.
You're emceeing
some things
the
away.
Night?
I'm going to be a little Diet Stephen St. John. You know, that's what they call me.
Okay.
I think Stephen took the helm for the Top Gun Maverick premiere.
Which made sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I get to, you know, kind of talk about this, like, very vibrant movie that involves a lot of fighting on a train. So I also feel like I'm really at home here. So, we're B&B Theaters tomorrow night. That's at 135th and Antioch. And we can give away some more tickets if you'd like.
You have history with trains?
Yeah, I almost missed one going to Chicago one time. Did get on in time and then had a lovely train ride.
Good for you.
So that's my one train story.
St. John's in St. Joe, so therefore he cannot be at the movie tomorrow. Do we want to go caller number Justin Watson wore number 17 last year?
I love it.
That's actually not that bad.
No, it's good.
It's not awful.
We've had fun with these so often, and we've never actually done it.
Let's do 17 for Justin Watson.
I kind of want to do 17 for Justin Watson, but then I also want to play like a Vince Scully clip right out of the gates too.
Or you're gonna have to pick one or the other.
What,
that's
can we do
fine.
Both?
Like, we can pick. We can announce one, and then have Beards hit space bar, and then he can take the calls. You know, during all that, Beards can handle it.
So we should do like a longer one of these clips then.
Have you heard the Wolf story?
I've heard the Wolf story. Have you heard the Madison Bumgarner story?
I don't know that I have.
Have you heard the Hank Aaron home run call?
That I have. Yes.
Have you heard the Don Larsen perfect game final out call?
I'm not sure.
Have you heard the Sandy Koufax perfect game final out call?
Hard to say.
Have you heard the Jim Tracy being ejected from a game and him yelling at the umpire and Vin Scully translating what he's saying?
If I have, I'd love to hear it again.
Let's play that one because that one's kind of fun.
Which one?
The Jim Tracy ejection translation from one Vin Scully. And we'll do caller. You know what? Here's what we'll do. After this, we'll open up the phone lines and do caller number 17.
All right.
So after we play this, because this is only about a minute, 15 or something, to warm up.
Get those numbers dialed
in. So here we go. So after this, so if you're a couple of minutes behind, you're like, all right, I'm going to start calling right now.
Yeah.
You're on the text line. There you go.
Frotron on Twitch. Get
there
calling.
We go. So here is Vin Scully. This is a game in which there was an out in the outfield, but it looked like the ball was trapped. They called it a catch and an out. And then Don Mattingly, after the out was called, then goes and complains and goes to the umpires. This is where we pick it up when Don Mattingly starts to go out to the umpires to give his thoughts on the fact that this was a base hit, not a catch.
Don Mattingly is going to argue. Now Estabrook is going to go over and talk to the other umpires. We couldn't call it, so I just looked at Estabrook, and he finally called it. Victorino is out on a fly ball, but the umpires are going to huddle. That's a good thing, no matter what. You want to make sure you get it right. Okay. Uh-oh. The meeting looks like they're going to call it a trap, and Jim Tracy, he caught the ball, Jim said. He caught the ball. He caught the blinking ball. He caught the darn ball. Uh-oh, you're gone. He is gone. That is blinking fertilizer. I'm doing the best to translate. You gotta be blinking me. The ball, he caught the ball. No way. No blinking way. No bloody way. Jim's gone, so he's spending house money now.
Really good.
No blinking way. He caught the blinking ball. You know what that is?
That is blinking fertilizer.
I want to play that anytime we have a bad take.
Blinking fertilizer.
That is blinking fertilizer, what that is. There's your Vin Scully translating Jim Tracy getting thrown out of a ball game for arguing whether or not that was a catch or a trap.
Can I hear just him saying fertilizer or that whole small clip just again?
Blinking.
That is blinking fertilizer.
You've really got to hit all three syllables.
Fertilizer.
Fertilizer.
That is blinking fertilizer.
It's amazing.
Really,
it's
great.
Even saying blinking fertilizer.
Blinking fertilizer.
It could have a lot of different meanings. 913-3810-810. We're going to open up the phone lines. 913-3810-810. A pair of tickets to Bullet Train for tomorrow night. Have we found out what time that thing's going
to
take place?
I was just looking at a different email to see what that email
okay,
says.
So
that email
you can show up at 7.
Okay.
Trivia and everything with Josh starts at 7:15.
Oh, okay.
Movies great. At 7:45.
Great.
I'm going to be there at like 6:45. Do you want to buy me popcorn and hang out? I knew when I was going to be there, but I knew I was going to be there early. So give me the trivia beginning time again.
Trivia starts at 7:15.
7:15. That's what I'm going to say. Get there. If you're not there by 7:15, you're going to miss a chance to answer some Brad Pitt-based trivia from me. So
7:14 and 30 seconds when Josh will arrive and his car just screaming into the parking lot.
Jason,
gets out, runs
Jason,
in.
Please. I will be driving a train through the parking lot into the theater. Choo choo, mother bleeper.
Yeah. Driving it or riding it?
I'm a conductor now.
Okay.
People don't know this about me, but.
Caller number 17, 913-3810-810. Caller number 17, because that's the number Justin Watson wore in Tampa Bay. I actually don't know what number he's wearing with the Chiefs right now in training camp. 84, maybe?
That really sounds good to me.
That's the name that immediately came to mind when I
it's probably
when
the
I think
name
Justin
that came
Watson.
To mind. It's probably the number that came to mind.
Did I say name?
Who's
yeah, it's
to
a number.
Say?
It's a number that came to mind
correction.
When the name Justin Watson was brought to mind.
84. You were right.
There we go. Nailed it. Otherwise known as Willie Davis. So Justin Watson talking to the media. I enjoyed that.
I did
it was
too.
Really good. A couple of things on Willie Gay as well that I want to get into. But I want to start with Justin Watson because he has said what Juju and MVS have said about the Chiefs offense. Now, you're talking about Marquez Valdes-Scantling that's played his entire career with Green Bay, mm-hmm. Juju that's played his entire career with Pittsburgh, and Justin Watson playing his entire career with Tampa. That's three different organizations, three different offenses, in which all three have said the same thing. What they like about the Chiefs offense is that there's freedom with different positions, and you're not just an outside receiver or a slot receiver. As Justin Watson described it, they didn't put anyone in a box. That when you got here, it was open. You were running different things. He said he ran slot a lot in Tampa Bay, and he wanted to do more and didn't get the opportunity, and he wants more. And now he gets an opportunity to play on the outside, some deep balls. And as he said, well, this is nothing but deep balls, you know, here. So I thought that was really interesting in just the same echoing of other wide receivers that are new to the Chiefs this year. And then, of course, the Patrick Mahomes ad-libbing that, you know, he saw on film that he was 50 yards downfield and he started to decelerate. And they said, no, you need to keep going. Keep accelerating 50 yards. He'll find you if you're open. It's not that, hey, this ain't Tom Brady. It's just that this isn't a typical quarterback. You're that far down the field. Instinctually, you would want to slow down and come back to the ball.
Sure.
Don't. Keep going. He'll find you.
Well, to marry those two things, there's one other element there that you didn't mention with MVS and Juju and now with Justin Watson. It's three different teams, three different organizations, three different offenses, three different Hall of Fame quarterbacks that those guys have all played under. Thank you. I try to bring one every show. No more than one. Three different Hall of Fame quarterbacks in offenses that were structured for them. You know, Tampa and Tom Brady was sort of a different evolution, but you know that neither here nor there. That's something that we're still, these things are coming out as totally unique to Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, Kansas City, that these other guys have not seen anywhere else because it doesn't really exist anywhere else.
So you're going to have to know the entire route tree. You got to know the entire offense. It's not, you're the slot and here are the routes that you run. And he even talked about that with MVS, that he was asked, who are you leaning on in the wide receiver room? Which is a great question, because who do you lean on when everybody's the new guy.
Right.
And he said MVS is who he's leaning on because he's got a relationship previously with MVS. Marquez Valdes-Scantling is from Tampa. Justin Watson played in Tampa, so they, you know, had that connection already. And he has helped him be a better deep ball receiver because that's MVS's specialty. And so something Justin Watson is going to be doing with the Chiefs and having that speed is doing that. So he has learned some of those techniques and tricks from MVS, whose specialty is that.
And whenever you end up, I think we just solved something we talked about already a couple times this week. When Travis Kelce talked about this being a friendly offense, mm-hmm. what does he mean? When incoming receivers or guys who played for Andy Reid their whole career and then exit and say, man, it just takes you some time to get all that under you. What is that? How can those all be true? How can this be complex and difficult and also friendly and open to freelancing? Well, it's what we just heard from Justin Watson. It's that, hey, you've got to learn everything so I can let you do everything.
Yeah.
You don't just need to master the slot here. And for Watson especially, he said, hey, look, whenever somebody's shoe comes off, whenever somebody's shoelace comes untied, I need to be the guy that can get out there. Which, man, what a good way to frame it if you're going to be a team's fifth or sixth receiver. But you have to have so much under your belt in the comfort and familiarity with every different moving part of this offense. But once you clear that bar, everything is open to you. Like that really is a tremendous part of what this offense can do that I think is very, very difficult for us to properly even translate to people, because I think it's very rare.
So last night or yesterday afternoon, whenever Kurt Warner put it out, he did the study ball,
mm-hmm.
and Kurt Warner spent about 17 minutes breaking down film and talking about Patrick Mahomes as a, quote, one-read quarterback, and said, look, here are my opinions on Patrick Mahomes before that, but there's commentary out there, so then let me now do a deeper dive and mm-hmm. see if there's anything to this. So he used just the Bills divisional round game and looked at different plays with Patrick Mahomes and then went through his Hall of Fame quarterbacking mind to decipher who was read one, read two, read three, and so on. What defense they were in. When the defense rotated down, what defense they were in as well. Therefore, this other receiver now becomes the first read, second read. Instead of the layperson going, well, he looked over there and threw over there, so that was his second read, where Kurt Warner was like, well, he did that because the first read is the linebacker, and as soon as the linebacker did that, he looked him off and went this way. So that was great. It was about 17 minutes, worth the time to watch. Typically, when people on Twitter see something that's 17 minutes long, they just scroll right past it and say, well, tell me what he said.
Right.
You know, give me the cliff notes.
I got a minute and a half tops.
Yeah. It was fascinating. I retweeted it, you know, and so it's really good stuff from Kurt Warner. It's also on YouTube, so if you don't have Twitter, just go to YouTube, look for Kurt Warner's study ball, and his most recent one is about Patrick Mahomes. And I thought about that as Justin Watson was talking about, he was asked about Patrick Mahomes as a teacher,
mm-hmm.
as a teaching the offense to somebody that's new and not just sounding like it's a different language and translating that to make it more understandable, and therefore it's easier to receive the information and process the information. And he said, Justin Watson did, about Mahomes. Mm. He has such a great understanding of defense, not just coverage, but specific teams and how they run their coverage. He talked about the Broncos, cover two, cover three, different teams, cover two, cover three, specific to their little idiosyncrasies and how they change things up. And then also explaining those things in a way that translates of, yeah, this is what they're in, but this guy's coming down here, that's your read. This guy's going over here, that's what you're basing it off of on this particular play, because the Broncos are going to do this. We're going to play the Broncos twice. This defense that Spags is in, the Broncos are going to be doing this with that defense, and these are the things you're going to have to key on when we're going up against that team, or whatever it is. And to hear that, and then to think back to the 17 minutes of Kurt Warner, who, it was fascinating stuff, because he was talking about how this guy comes down and then this the safety is doing this. So now Patrick Mahomes knows they're in this coverage And so he's looking over here. Here's his first read. Boom, not there. You see the hips on this cornerback do this, or this linebacker where his foot went. Immediately then you look the other way because you know your next read is here. Boom, there's Patrick Mahomes. Sees that, immediately looks elsewhere. And just as Kurt Warner was going through and saying, here's your first read. Okay, this cornerback did this. Okay, here's your second read. Oh, look, Patrick Mahomes is already going there. All right, this is doing this. Now he's waiting for the safety to do something over there. Okay, now Patrick Mahomes is moving on because this is the exact read. Now you're moving on to your next thing. He also talked about as it was going on that he goes, look, I'm not saying that Patrick Mahomes is only going through read one, two, three. He goes, you know, there are some times when read one is the guy you throw to. And he goes, most often, quarterbacks typically know where they're going to go with the ball based on the defense they think is being presented. So they have an idea of what the read is. And he said in that Bills game, he was talking about that. He's like, Mahomes is so masterful in knowing exactly what the Bills are going to be in and being able to adjust from there. And he even showed a play in which the Bills disguised correctly, which then tricked the Chiefs on what they were supposed to do. So the Chiefs had verticals on the outside, and then they had a vertical in the slot, and they had Travis Kelce lined up in the slot on the left side or at the top of the screen. So they had four guys going out. Three of them were running verticals. They thought the Bucs were going to be, or the Bills were going to be in a cover two. So they were going to beat the verticals on the right side over the cornerback underneath the safety. But as soon as the snap went on, the safeties moved into a different position, showing they were not doing what the Chiefs thought. And he talked about it and said, here's why this is what the Chiefs thought they were going to do. Here's why Patrick Mahomes thought this when he took the snap. Here's where Patrick Mahomes immediately adjusted based on that defense. And he goes, the only outlet is to Kelce over here, who's underneath, who's running a little hitch. And he goes, Mahomes takes a snap and he goes and looks at, he's looking right at the safety. The safety takes two steps that way. He immediately goes to Kelce.
That there also is the game. Not that particular play, but the week of planning. Yeah. Every conversation we have with Steve Spagnuolo, every conversation you have with Eric Bieniemy, the meetings they are having behind closed doors, what Patrick Mahomes is preparing for now is to see his safety. Expect something, look at something, identify something,
I'm going outside to McColl here because he's going to go over the cornerback and under the safety. I'm going to get these guys on a vertical route against cover two.
And then you get two steps from a safety at the snap and you go, oh, bleep. Okay, let's go to the next, not the next read. Mm-hmm. Let's do the next thing. Let us fully adjust what our plan here was going to be. They now adjust. We have to adjust back again. And you have to make that entire recalibration. You have to redo that math before a 300-pound man mm-hmm. comes and squishes you under the entire weight of his body leaping.
Based on two steps by a safety.
Two, and if it takes you three steps,
yeah,
it's a sack or you're going mm-hmm. to your first read and it's contested or it's picked off.
Or if it takes you three steps, that linebacker is getting to Kelce quicker
yes,
on the hitch.
Yes.
And now he's no longer open. You got to get there fast.
Everybody's covered
to throw the ball.
Because you didn't diagnose that thing quickly enough. And I don't know that there's a way that we can ever... Hey, God bless Kurt Warner for trying to help.
No kidding.
I don't think there is anything that we can do to get more than about 50 people on the planet who really know what it's like to do that and to do it at a high, successful level. It is even more superhero stuff than the physical things that players are able to do on a football field because you have to do it physically after mentally getting there. I just think that stuff is always tremendous.
Yes, yeah. And him talking about that particular play again was a 7-yard gain. So in the middle of that game,
all of that we
7 yards.
We didn't talk about that play at that time. Then
no,
we talked about 13 seconds that came later.
It's just a random play in the middle of the game that gained you 7 yards. And that play specifically, I thought was interesting because with the offense and the routes they were running, what he had said was as soon as this safety does this and the linebacker turns his hips, Mahomes knows all three verticals are going to be covered. Three of the four guys are now not going to be open. So your only option is to Kelce at the top of the screen running a hitch. And as he immediately goes to Kelce and throws the ball, the linebacker is coming over to cover. He gets the ball to Kelce. Just before the linebacker gets there, Kelce then turns and picks up 2 more yards, so it's a 7-yard gain. If he looks over there a half second, a second later, the linebacker's already there on Kelsey. And now Mahomes has to play ad-lib and is running and scrambling, or he's sacked, and who knows what happens on that drive. I don't know, but it's diagnosing that quick, 7-yard gain. And when you're watching it, it looks like it's a, hey, just take the easy pitch and catch. Why doesn't Mahomes just go with the easy pitch and catch, just take the easy? They should do that every time. The 5 or 6 yard gain.
This patient took the 5 yard
gain. Just take the, oh, no, actually they were going verticals. He was going to go over the top to McColl or Tyreek against that defense, and the Bills disguised it well. And even with the Bills disguising the defense well and then getting into that defense and cutting off 3 of the 4 routes and being in a position to where they are a half second away to having everything covered, Mahomes diagnosed it quick enough and then threw it there in the amount of time that it took to be able to find the only receiver. And that's coming from Hall of Famer Kurt Warner, who's breaking all those things down. It just, it to me, it was another level of appreciating that the ad-lib stuff happens, but all of the diagnosing pre-snap and immediately diagnosing during the play is just a total, it's another level than I'll ever be able to comprehend.
You touched on it there, but I don't want to gloss over it. The bleeped up thing about this that we all just talked about isn't even just the fact that it's a 7-yard gain in the middle of the game that is not memorable until you go back and dissect it. The bleeped up thing is that the Bills did everything right
on that play.
They did everything right. They took away what could have been ideally options 1, 2, and 3, or at least the number one option, and then the overall spirit of the play. They disguised it so the Chiefs couldn't adjust before the snap. The safeties made the moves they needed to make. The linebacker was closing in, and it didn't matter because Patrick Mahomes read it, delivered it, and found Travis Kelce just in the half-second window that play had a chance to succeed. Being a defensive coordinator must be exhausting.
Yeah, you did everything right, and you're still facing 2nd and 3 on the next play.
Welcome to the NFL!
Now we got 2nd and 3, yeah.
Have fun!
It just makes it more absurd. We can look from the outside and go, really, he's a one-read quarterback, shut up, defensive coordinator. And then Kurt Warner's like, well, actually, let's look. Okay, that's as dumb as something that anybody has ever said about a quarterback.
That stuff happens all the time.
Yeah.
All the time it's happening. We go, oh, 4-yard gain to Kelce.
Yep. He even broke down the winning touchdown pass to Kelce there and just how that developed based on the look and the pause and the head movement for Patrick Mahomes, the pre-snap read, all of that stuff. It was just really fascinating. If you want to go check it out. If you're a Mahomes fan, a Chiefs fan, it's catnip.
Yes.
is essentially what it is. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling. Willie Gay said a couple things that I want to talk about as well. And then some more Vin Scully clips that we can play as well. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Got 18 reps in the bench.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, we'll continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson, Josh Briscoe, Beards. We'll talk with Mick Schaefer coming up at 1 o'clock. KSHB 41 Sports Director, brought to you by Kona Big Wave. Take a little break and single task tonight with a Big Wave Golden Ale from Kona Brewing Company. We've talked some Royals in the trade deadline. We've talked a lot of Chiefs as well, and played some clips from Vin Scully and his just amazing historic life that he lived and all the different events that he was a part of and had the play-by-play for. Let's play another couple clips from Vin Scully here. Let's go Don Larsen's perfect game. The final call for Don Larsen in the perfect game that he pitched in the World Series is about a minute and a half. Vin Scully on the call, obviously, for the Dodgers against the Yankees, but the Don Larsen perfect game, final call, final out from Vin Scully.
Got it. The greatest game ever pitched. Great ball hit by Don Larsen. A no-hitter, a perfect game in a World Series. Never in the history of the game has it ever happened in a World Series. Only the second time in baseball history, a World Series, where a perfect game has been pitched. 64,517 have seen it. Millions more played. In 1947, Bill Bevins came so heartbreakingly close to pitching a no-hitter and didn't do it. But no man has ever pitched a perfect game in a World Series. Only one perfect game has ever been pitched, but that was in the course of the regular season. But when you put it in a World Series, you've set the biggest diamond in the biggest ring. And so hats off to Don Larson. No runs, no hits, no errors, no walks, no base runners. The final score, the Yankees 2 runs, 5 hits, and no errors. The Dodgers, no runs, no hits, no errors, in fact, nothing at all.
What a great call. I mean, just when you do it in the World Series, you've set the biggest diamond in the biggest ring. Just, and then Dodgers, no runs, no hits, no errors, in fact, nothing at all against Don Larson in the perfect game in 1956.
We heard during the break, you mentioned one Vin Scully stat earlier in the show, but this, how rare for announcers to have stats, but I'm counting this as one.
You should.
That he called Jackie Robinson Dodgers games and Clayton Kershaw Dodgers games.
Yeah.
This also led, shout out to Beards for leading me down this path, the fact that Martin Luther King Jr., Barbara Walters, and Anne Frank would all be the same age if they were all alive today. They were all born in the same year. Those kind of things really change your perception of time. Crossing and Vin Scully being at the absolute top of the profession of the sport as an icon for that long, we got a long list of clips that that we could keep shuffling through.
Yeah, and you know what? Let's play another one. You know, Vin Scully sometimes when history is being made, do you know that it's ultimately being made at that specific time? Bigger moments, certainly. Hank Aaron in 1973 hits home run, or 1974, because 73 he finished the season a couple of home runs shy, or one home run shy of Babe Ruth. So then the 74 campaign, he finally hits number 715. And so in 1974, obviously a big deal, but the way even to present it as well from Vin Scully. Now, I will say that some of these clips that we put in there, there are longer periods of time where he says nothing and it's just the crowd roaring, because that's one of the things that Vin Scully was so great at. Vern Lundquist tells the story of this particular call, that when the ball left the yard, after he said it was gone, he backed away from the microphone to keep himself from almost, you know, to keep himself from interjecting, like even if he might want to, he didn't want to. So if you back away from the microphone, you can't just simply yell. The Vern Lundquist was like, no, he walked away so that he knew he wouldn't interrupt that moment that was going on, that people could just embrace and hear the cheering and the fireworks going on. I cut that down to like 10 seconds. Okay, so you'll hear it like 10 seconds, but it was really like 45 seconds of just nothing. So this is about 2 minutes or so of the Hank Aaron home run call, number 715, and the historical context that also, in the moment, Vin Scully's able to put it in.
Once again, a standing ovation for Henry Aaron. So the confrontation for the second time. Aaron walked in the second inning. He means the tying run at the plate now. So we'll see what Downing does. Al at the belt delivers, and he's low, ball one. And that just adds to the pressure. The crowd booing. Downing has to ignore the sound effects and stay a professional and pitch his game. One ball and no strikes. Aaron waiting, the outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone. What a marvelous moment for baseball. What a marvelous moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the Deep South for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol. And it is a great moment for all of us, and particularly for Henry Aaron.
who was met at home plate not only by every member of the Braves, but by his father and mother. He threw his arms around his father, and as he left the home plate area, his mother came running across the grass, threw her arms around his neck, kissed him for all she was worth. As Aaron circled the bases, the Dodgers on the infield shook his hand, and that was a memorable moment. Aaron is being mobbed by photographers. He is holding his right hand high in the air, and for the first time in a long time, that poker face of Aaron shows the tremendous strain and relief of what it must have been like to live with for the past several months. It is over. At 10 minutes after 9 in Atlanta, Georgia, Henry Aaron has eclipsed the mark set by Babe Ruth.
I mean, the context he put it in right there, that a black man in the Deep South is getting a standing ovation for breaking the record of an all-time baseball icon. It's great. And the poker face of Henry Aaron finally relieving with the strain of what it has been like for him, what it had to been like for him the previous few months, because he ended one home run short and then goes into the entire offseason and the beginning of that year and finally hits a second home run of that year to get number 715. And of course, Vin Scully was on the call, which is just great. I mean, it's one of the amazing, it's like Vin Scully is Forrest Gump, like the real life sports equivalent of Forrest Gump, that there's a big moment. Well, Vin Scully was there. And hey, here's the call of Vin Scully in that moment. It's just unbelievable.
He sounds like baseball. He represents so much of so many generations of baseball. And in a clip like that, you go, oh, he was also just, I guess he was just a poet covering baseball, talking mm-hmm. about yeah. baseball. Because if there was a moment he didn't meet, I haven't heard it yet. Because you have all-time history from Buckner to Hank Aaron. And he had everything to say that needed to be said and knew when to stop.
Yeah.
Like you said, and let the crowd fill the moment.
Yeah. And again,
it's beautiful.
I cut out about 35 seconds of just the crowd cheering that
for our
Vin
context
Scully,
yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. Vin Scully uh-huh. just let it breathe and let it sit there, which was great. And it's perfect. And it's one of the reasons why he's the best that's ever done it. He's inspiring and depressing at the same time.
Yeah.
Because you hear him, and if you're somebody that would be an aspiring broadcaster, you would hear him go, wow, that's what I want, but I'll never be that, so what's the point?
Just changing my
so
goals.
What's the point?
Well,
in the most difficult play-by-play, I shouldn't say of any sport, because, you know, I don't know.
It's different.
I've never tried hockey play-by-play.
Seems hard.
I can imagine that would be incredibly difficult. But difficult in terms of baseball, football, and basketball, that there's so much of interjecting story and analysis and strategy along with some action, as opposed to football, which is my favorite to do play-by-play, because there's action and then some analysis, action, analysis, and then baseball, not really, because it's just all action, action, action. Basketball, I mean. Action, action, action. A little analysis. Action, action, action. A little analysis. Baseball's so difficult.
Baseball is just filled with space. Beards, if we can just get one
more.
If we can squeeze in a minute here.
Sorry, Beards. One minute.
This is my favorite Vin Scully audio that had actually came out of just a few years ago. He was on the Dan Lebatard show with Stu Gatz, and they're back on ESPN. And if you're a young broadcaster who heard Vin Scully there and went, I'll never be able to do that, you might find this tale of his a little more relatable.
Oh, yeah, sure. I guess they're over the years you would have to be. And basically the most, and I think you'll get the picture immediately, back about my third year, yeah, about 1952, the Dodgers were playing Cincinnati, and Cincinnati had an outfielder named Lloyd Merriman. I'll never forget it. And Lloyd hit a ball foul, and my mind told me to say, hot shot, hit, foul.
No, oh, no, 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 man.
And it never came out that way. And everybody in the booth fell down, and I was absolutely mortified. And the reason I remember Lloyd Merriman, I started filling. He's a former Marine Air Corps pilot, saw combat in Korea. You know, I did on and on. That really that had to be, considering how young I was. Yeah, that was about it.
Amazing, because we've all done that. He just played the clip coming back of how many reps on the bench press, but me not saying bench. Yeah, I didn't go into Air Force pilot or anything like that to try to fill. Like,
how incredible that he remembers that story. That was 60 years after the fact. Lloyd Merriman, right?
Amazing. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling more Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Their fans will go ape sh**.
Weekdays from 10 to 2. On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Oh, whoa! He just said it on the air. What is wrong with you?
Is that the reaction they had in the booth when Vin Scully said he tried to say a hot shot hit foul? And he said that is not what came out, and the booth lost it. Was it St. John going, what is wrong with you?
Fertilizer, hit foul.
You just said that on the air. All right, so Bullet Train tomorrow, B&B Theaters. Briscoe will be there hosting trivia and emceeing and doing all sorts of fun stuff and everything. And you can be there as well with him tomorrow.
And several others.
Nope.
Whole theater. We ran out the whole theater. It's not just you and me.
No, just Beards and two lucky winners. You and a guest in Beards can go to B&B tomorrow night. Movie starting at 7:45, trivia at 7:15. We're going to do caller 8 and 10. We're also going to give away a text line pair. So caller 8 and 10, 913-3810-810. Caller 8 and 10 to get a pair of tickets to Bullet Train for tomorrow night.